While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Hey, very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and today is Tuesday, the 23rd of June, 2026. Now, as Namibia moves further into the week, key developments across the government, business, communities, and international affairs continue to shape national conversations, from economic growth and infrastructure development to governance, investment, service delivery, and social progress. The issues making headlines today have important implications for the future of our country. Now, this afternoon, we take a closer look at the stories driving discussions across Namibia and beyond. We examine developments influencing economic performance, employment creation, youth empowerment, regional development, and efforts to improve the quality of life for citizens in every corner of the nation. Now, in today's program, we explore how Namibia is positioning itself within an increasingly competitive and interconnected global environment. As international markets evolve and technological innovation accelerates, opportunities continue to emerge across key sectors, including energy, mining, agriculture, fisheries, tourism, logistics, manufacturing, and digital transformation. Now, at the same time, policymakers and stakeholders are navigating challenges related to sustainability, to competitiveness, and inclusive growth. We also focus on the issues affecting communities on the ground. Access to quality education, healthcare services, affordable housing, clean water, reliable electricity, efficient public services, and meaningful economic opportunities remains at the center of public concern. Now, across Namibia's regions, communities continue to seek practical, tangible solutions that improve livelihoods, create jobs, and strengthen local economies. Regional governance remains in focus as leaders continue to outline development priorities and report on progress achieved in their respective regions. Discussions around infrastructure delivery, investment attraction, agricultural support, urban development, and social services continue to highlight both achievements and challenges facing communities throughout the country. Meanwhile, Namibia's engagement with regional and international partners remains a significant part of the national agenda. Ongoing discussions on trade, investment, industrialization, energy cooperation and economic integration reflect the country's commitment to expanding opportunities for growth while strengthening strategic partnerships across Africa and beyond. Now, not forget beyond the borders. Beyond our borders, the global landscape continues to evolve rapidly. Geopolitical developments, changing trade dynamics, climate-related challenges, technological advancements, and the growing influence of artificial intelligence are reshaping economies and societies worldwide. Now, understanding these developments is increasingly important as Namibia seeks to strengthen its reliance, attract investment, and secure long-term prosperity. Now, as always, we thank you for making us part of your afternoon. Whether you're listening from home, at work, on the road, online, we appreciate your company and your engagement. Now, stay with us as we unpack today's biggest stories, analyze the issues behind the news, and bring you the insight that matters most, only right here on the Reader News Analysis. Now, let's get right into debunking today's conversation. The Ministry of Home Affairs, Immigration, Safety and Security has begun implementing electronic identity documents, commonly known as EIDs. Now, while the initiative represents a significant step toward modernizing Namibia's national identification system, it has also generated considerable public discussion, speculation, and concern. So what exactly are electronic identity documents, and what are they not? Now, at their core, EIDs are modern identity cards equipped with electronic technology, usually in the form of a secure chip. Now, I do have with me Mr. Jackson Wanjiva, and he is the Deputy Executive Director and Chief Registrar at the Ministry of Home Affairs, Immigration, Safety and Security. A very good afternoon to you, Sain. It's a pleasure to have you with me in studio.
Good afternoon, Dafa, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Of course, we're talking about EIDs, electronic identification cards, which has really stirred up a lot of speculation and concerns. First and foremost, I think I want you to debunk, say, what are electronic identity cards?
As you rightly stated in your introductory remarks, an electronic ID is a physical card. Let me start there.
Yeah.
It's a physical card.
Okay.
It's a card, a secure, smart identity card fitted with a chip.
Mm-hmm.
And in that chip stores your personal information.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like your legal name, your date of birth,
mm-hmm.
your photo, and your biometric data.
Yeah.
It's actually a physical card. Thank you. With a chip.
Okay, with a chip. Yes. I think that's where the problem comes in. Whether it's a problem or it's a good thing, I don't know. You're going to tell us. The people are wondering what exactly is a chip, although we are going to have somebody in the line of IT to come and really debunk for us as well, because, I mean, we want to get it from all angles. But, Mr. Wanjiva, what does that chip actually mean? Is it in the physical card? I know you said about the physical card, but want it to be very clear. Is it in the physical card, or is it that Home Affairs is intending to put these chip cards in our hands and our foreheads and everywhere else on our body? Please explain.
Yeah, no, thank you. you know, with every change comes resistance.
Indeed.
Yeah, and most resistance sometimes comes from lack of information and therefore lack of understanding of a particular product. Such lack often leads to misconceptions and misinformation.
Sure.
And in this particular case, Namibia is introducing an EID.
Mm.
An EID that, unfortunately now we are saying, will have a chip to store that information, because mm-hmm. digital, technology, that is the future.
Yes.
That's where we are moving to.
Indeed.
And now I think the issue here is, as you are saying, the chip is the, maybe that word, maybe we need to find an alternative word for a chip.
No, not necessarily find an alternative word. I think just break it down for them.
Uh-huh. Yes. But basically, This chip is embedded in the card.
Yeah.
It's a smart card, just like all other cards that we are carrying.
Like a bank card, for instance.
Like a bank card. Uh-huh. It's a normal card with
mm-hmm.
a chip.
Mm-hmm.
But with this one, the chip is within the card. In the card, it's not, you can't touch it. It's between the layers of the card.
There. Yeah.
For safety reasons, so that it cannot damage.
Okay.
So this is an ID designed to make it easier and faster.
Great news!
Oh, I'm
Inbox
so sorry.
Just got
I didn't
even
notice
better.
That.
We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM.
Welcome back. And Mr. Jackson was busy explaining to us the purpose of this chip or this electronic ID. Continue, sir.
Okay, thank you. As I was saying, this is an ID with an embedded chip.
Yeah.
Just like all other smart cards.
Mm-hmm.
The chip is in the ID.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's for security. It stores your information, and it's inside because it has to last longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the This is the same chip one can say that we have on other cards, as I explained before.
Yeah.
In this, the one that we are using now is a contactless chip. You might have heard about that.
Okay.
Meaning, you when you are at a point of service.
Yeah.
For the service provider to identify you, it's basically just to tap your ID on a device, and based on the information that you as the holder of the card, give consent to what particular information that particular service provider has to access.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it's going to work.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mm, interesting. Mm. Now, is digital...
And if I may add...
Sure, yes, please.
Yeah, I think your question went to say some corners of the country, some people are saying... these chips are embedded in people and so forth.
Physical body.
There is no truth in that.
Okay.
We need to emphasize that chip is on the card and it has no capabilities of tracking or monitoring people's movements.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no.
Okay. I think that's really where the main concern for people are. They seem to be, confusing it with the mark of the beast that they read in the Bible, 666 and all that. They seem to be definitely confusing with that, because the difference now would be that this one is not being put physically on people's hands and neither being physically put on people's foreheads. And I think that's where the issue had been. You rightly said where there is not sufficient information that has been given out to the people, speculations are bound to be there.
Yeah.
Rumors are bound to be there. So, I can see that there is a need to make more, knowledge or more videos perhaps on this, and perhaps maybe for the ministry to physically show what it is and what is not. But before we do get to that, Mr. Wanjiva, what difference is there between a digital identity and electronic identity document? Those two phrases, are we speaking about the same thing?
Yeah, not exactly.
Okay.
Even though sometimes people use them interchangeably,
yeah,
these are two different things.
Okay.
One, if we speak of, we are talking of digital identity. Digital identity refers to digital credentials.
Okay.
Used to identify a person online or on a smart device.
Mm.
Okay. It is a broad concept which includes your different type accounts, online accounts, such as your Facebook, your Google account, Apple account, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the electronic ID?
Mm-hmm.
As I explained in the beginning, it's a physical government issued. That's very important. It's a legal document issued by government, and it's a smart form. But it's a physical card with a chip embedded, microchip embedded in that card, that's where the difference is. The other one is digital, and this one is a physical card with a chip that stores your personal information.
Okay. Now that we know what it is not. Can you perhaps also identify some of the rumors that that have been said that it are said to be what it is, but it's actually not? Because I've only identified what I've heard. What is it that Home Affairs has had in terms of rumors regarding this electronic ID that you want to make clear to the public that it is not?
One thing I can make clear to the public is to say, yes, it's true. We have had rumors and some people standing up saying the mark of the beast, the implantations of the chip in people's bodies.
Yeah,
that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's a normal smart card with a chip. Eh?
Yeah.
The chip makes it smart, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's like those other cards that we already have in our pockets.
Like a bank card.
I
don't think they can use our bank cards to trace us, but I'm not an IT person, so let's just...
Exactly. Yeah. It will have no capability of tracing you. It's basically to make our lives easier.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a service provider. That service provider will be able to identify you in real time instead of approaching, for example, the Minister of Home Affairs through a letter or through an email to confirm and whether that document is authentic. But with this identity card, just there in real time, you can be accurately identified by the service provider.
What are some of the benefits of this electronic ID? What comes with it? Why change from the usual ID? I mean, both of them are still a card sort of. What is the difference now?
Yeah. As I said, like I mentioned, holders and service providers to be able to identify the person in front of you in real time. Authentication is a matter of just putting your thumbprint there, and then the system can already tell and verify and authenticate that this is the rightful owner of the document mm-hmm. standing in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It will make services faster. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it okay. So you as a holder of this card, a person who accesses your information, you give consent through further authentication methods like giving your thumbprint or your personal identification number. It will reduce identity theft. We have cases of people stealing other people's identities and commit crimes and do other things.
Mm-hmm.
With this, it will not be possible because one has to verify and you will be authenticated.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a secure and platform, and it's protected by law. It will serve as a trusted source, mm-hmm. a means of accessing services,
mm-hmm.
Especially conducting transactions and verifying identity digitally.
Okay.
So the most important part is when it comes to accessing your information as a holder of the card, you give consent. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Now, while we're still here, let's let's engage now. Pardon me. Douglas Shango. Let me pronounce that rightly. Douglas Mashonganyika, and he is a cybersecurity master's student and the founder of Medalgo app. A very good afternoon to you, Douglas. Pleasure to have you with me right here telephonically on the Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you. Douglas, we are busy debunking regarding the electronic ID or the EID. Now we want to hear from you, somebody who's in cybersecurity and of course who understands IT, having studied this and having put together or having founded Medalgo app. Explain to us just exactly to make it clear for the Namibian people what this probably ID would mean when it has a chip, when we talk about it having a chip, having biometric data of Namibian people, and perhaps what it is not.
Okay. An electronic ID is just a normal ID with your information, a name, ID, photo, but it's stored securely on your phone or on a card instead of only on paper. When you use this ID, your phone or card sends a secure signal to prove that it's really you, the same way that a tap-to-pay bank card would work. This chip that people worry about is the same small chip that is already inside your bank card and passports. It just sits in your phone or card, not actually in your body. So the thing that you don't have to worry about is that nothing is actually implanted under your skin. The chip has no battery and no GPS. And only works when you tap it within a few centimeters of
it. It only works when you? Douglas, I need you to move a little bit. It's as if there's a lot of noise in the background, so I'm not getting you so quite clearly.
Oh, okay. Mm. Sorry. Can you hear me better now?
I think it's a little bit better, yeah?
Okay.
Okay.
So as I was saying is that this chip is not actually implanted in your body. It wouldn't even be able to work if it was in such a situation. So it would either be in your phone or on a card, and it's the same type of technology that a passport or a bank card work. Yeah. So that is basically how what we need to know so that we don't fear such a technology.
Yeah. How is a chip designed to actually store biometric data? Also debunk on that. I know that a lot of people might understand how, but we may not. Of course, we have bank cards. Also just debunk on that thing. How do? There's a whole lot of noise, Douglas. There was a whole lot of wind, actually. So how exactly is information stored in a chip card? How is biometric data stored in there? How does that work?
Well, the data is actually stored as an encrypted component on the chip. It's not actually storing the entire data. However, it just stores an encrypted that is connected to your actual data. So when you make use of the ID, sorry about the wind, but when you make use of the ID, this key that is on the ID is then linked to whatever system that is scanning. Then the system would then look for the actual data that is stored in the database. With your data. So the data isn't actually on the chip, the key that links to the actual data.
Mm-hmm. Douglas, yeah. With your IT knowledge, tell us the benefits of something of this nature. And would you applaud Namibia for, or the Ministry of Home Affairs to be specific, for wanting to modernize EIDs, or perhaps what is your opinion?
My opinion is that this is a great step forward. It would prevent data loss if all we do is just keep data or our personal information on physical cards. They can easily get lost. But with an electronic ID such as this one, the data is stored securely on their database, possibly a cloud, so the loss of data wouldn't be a problem anymore. If someone makes or someone is using an electronic ID and they lose their card or their phone, they can still link back to their digital persona or their digital information that is linked within the database, because everything is already in the cloud. It's not on a physical piece of paper.
Interesting. Douglas, thank you so much for making time for us. Is there something perhaps I didn't ask that you would want to address on specifically?
Nothing from my side, no. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Douglas, thank you so much for making time for us.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wanjiva, back to you. Interesting. He talks about if once ID perhaps is lost or ID document, you know, it curbs down on, I think, the physical storage of information I want to understand whether if I would be required to always carry the card, or can I be able to go to perhaps any ministry and, I don't know, and they'll be able to access my information, or is it that I have to carry this card with me all the time?
Yeah, that's now where it comes to digital identity.
Okay.
If you go to a service provider where you already had but for now we would want you to carry that ID for authentication purposes.
Okay.
Yeah, but just to say that ID, by introducing it, it will open up opportunities for us to venture into that physical digital space where you then would say may come a time when you don't even need to carry your driver's license, your voter's card, your everything, because your ID will be able to do that for you.
Okay.
Because it's more about authentication.
Okay.
Yeah.
Almost like when you go to the doctor's office you have a file there already.
Yeah.
You don't have to bring all your documents because they have it already. But then that's physical.
Yeah.
Now in this scenario, perhaps when I do go to, let me not say bank, that's a little bit too obvious. A certain maybe institution.
Yeah.
And where they usually always require my physical ID. If they already have the information, then perhaps I don't have to.
Yeah. You may use your biometrics.
My fingerprint.
Yeah. That's where we are moving to, but that is the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now, for now, we are introducing the card and see, and move into making this card work for the Namibian people, make life easier for both, citizens and the service providers, be public and private.
Yeah. Now, when we cross over to the time when perhaps fingerprints are going to be involved and all that, will the public still be made aware? I mean, okay, I understand we still use our fingerprints and so many different things, especially police clearance and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Will then the public still be made aware to understand? I think what I want to get to is what is that the ministry has in store for the public in terms of educating, thoroughly bringing education to the people so that they can understand perhaps videos. I mean, we are now in an advanced world of modern world where things are made easier by explaining through videos, perhaps, and extensively showing what it is and what it's not and how it actually works. Is there such a planning behind this electronic ID to make it clear to the Namibian people?
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's we are engaged we are doing public engagements.
Mm-hmm.
We're just about to finalize our concept note.
Okay.
For that we would use for people to understand.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we started with public education engagement last year already.
Okay.
We started with something called the UN conference, where we invited people from all walks of life in Windhoek to really bring this out and say what is actually an AID and what is in for me as a citizen of this country or as a businessman. And then it was followed by another public engagement where we went to Erongo and we visited places like Oshimbingwe, where it was a mixture of, because Oshimbingwe was chosen because it's a kind of semi-urban kind of setup, just for us to get the views of all other people from different kind of worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And these public engagements are continuing. We have one upcoming going to Maheke, and they will continue throughout. You are saying we need to develop materials that will be easy to understand for different people, so that people can really see and understand what is an EID and what is really the benefit of having an EID.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Interesting. Is there perhaps something that I didn't ask that you would still want to educate the public on in regards to the EID?
Yeah, no, it's just to say people should not panic. It's good for them to ask for information.
Mm-hmm.
It's information is what makes us understand what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these questions come because some people have not been exposed to the information.
Yeah.
We're just urging them to say the ministry remains available for if there are questions regarding product services that the ministry is offering. The ministry is available to provide information.
Yeah.
And it's always good for the public to get information from these official channels and also from the public engagements that we are going to undertake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we it's good to thank the Namibian people for really always asking questions where they are not clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as public servants, some of us who are there, it's our duty to provide this information.
There's quite a strong saying that ignorance is not an excuse. And I think it's up to us also to educate ourselves before we make speculations, perhaps ask. But then is there a particular number that Home Affairs has. I know a lot of Namibians have many questions and perhaps would want to even hear it from the horse's mouth itself. They might not always get it. It's when we have conversation like this on the radio, but sometimes they would really just want to hear somebody from Home Affairs answer their questions. Is that perhaps a toll-free number that the Namibian people can also call on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have our public relations office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those numbers are on our website,
mm-hmm.
and also on our Facebook site.
Okay.
And we have a very, very, very engaging public relations office.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I must say quite flexible, because I got hold of you yesterday and here's the interview today. It's a pleasure to have you really debunk on this electronic ID, Mr. Wanjiva. Perhaps I wouldn't do justice if I don't ask, when exactly can we have this roll out, or is it already in effect, and what are the Namibian people supposed to do? For those who have not understood that it's not a microchip that is meant to, you know, 666, the beast and all that.
Yeah.
For those who really want to go and get it, when can they do that? How should they go about it?
Yeah, the planned date for the go live, rollout for this EID is September 1st.
Okay.
Yeah, that is, we hope nothing goes wrong there.
Yeah.
There is no delay, but that is the target date for now.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Wanjiva, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For being with us. Okay. And then we had it up from Mr. Wanjiva, Deputy Executive Director at the Ministry of Home Affairs. Now, a little bit of something just of knowledge for you, our listeners, regarding still the EID. Now, at their core, EIDs are modern identity cards equipped with electronic technology, usually in the form of a secure microchip, as you had Mr. Wanjiva also break it down, and Douglas break it down as well, who is into IT and cybersecurity. Now, the chip stores personal identification information in a protected digital format, allowing authorities to verify an individual's identity more accurately and efficiently. Now, the move forms part of a broader global trend toward digital government services, where countries are modernizing civil registration and identification systems in order to improve security, reduce fraud, and streamline access to public and private services. Now, what EIDs are? They are electronic identity documents that are designed to provide a more secure form of identification, reduce identity theft, as you had Mr. Wanjiva's address it there, document forgery and impersonation, also improve the access of identity verification processes, facilitate access to government services and administration procedures, as well as support digital transformation and future e-government initiatives. I've heard the Minister of Information and Technology, that's Emma Teofilos, saying they would want a Namibia where systems speak to each other. So I guess this is maybe perhaps part of the rollout in future, so that government systems speak to each other, and also enhance border management and national security systems through reliable identification. Now, in the future, EIDs may allow citizens to access various services more conveniently, including government applications, financial services, healthcare systems, social grants, and other digital platforms. Now, it is not a microchip. I can almost guarantee you that, having knowledge and understanding of what is said to be a microchip in the Bible. Maybe that will be a conversation of another time, from a biblical perspective, to cater for those who have questions around that. Nonetheless, this is On the Radar News Analysis. Please do come through, air opinions, ask questions, especially for those who still may have questions on this conversation. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. I repeat that slowly. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. For now, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito da njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado ili nawa nune udo o tukwetira o special ngeta shake ngeje pa o marudi dayo loka opone o jeni fena wa nokumona o ijamo iri nawa ninge kwata fanona na Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora itatu natu bali o itatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ngeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumuna oijewa ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko.
Welcome back. Now in other news, stakeholders from government institutions, civil society organizations, community groups and development partners gathered on 22nd June for an information sharing session at the Government Information Sharing Center aimed at strengthening community well-being and promoting sustainable social development across Namibia. Now the session provided a platform for participants to discuss challenges affecting communities, share best practices and explore collaborative solutions in order to improve the overall quality of life for citizens. Now, discussions are focused on issues such as public health, education, youth development, social protection, community safety, mental health awareness, poverty reduction, and access to essential services. Now, community well-being has increasingly become a priority area for policymakers and development practitioners as Namibia continues to address social and economic challenges. But for that, let's pause right here for a scheduled commercial break.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
So community well-being has to do with providing not just psychosocial support to every single Namibian or individual within that space. What are the things that are that leads to their health, physical health, their mental health, emotional health, even spiritual health? What programs do we have within that community that caters to these individuals? Is it open-minded to everybody? Is it closed? What are the systematic theories that we have out there that also hinder people to actually getting access to information, if at all. Mm-hmm. Can the person who doesn't have a car or a bike, can they actually get access or not? Do we go to the communities or not? So community well-being has to do with providing services that reach every single person on various domains, not just the one domain. Mm-hmm. And this is where we have partners like myself, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Gender, so that we can work hand in hand. If I have a client that I know that Ministry of Health can work much better with, this is where networking comes in, mm-hmm. and where we refer people. So it's a holistic point of view of helping the individual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ms. Guys, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, just to also mention that to group it up to say besides services that are provided, we can also look at it from the lens of socially, what are the things that are in place for the community to function properly, economically, how is the economic status of the community, for the community to be able to afford certain basic needs that they might have, are they able to afford or are they not able to afford, and then we'll look at politically, how stable is the community politically, you mm-hmm. understand? Mm-hmm. So politically, because we all know politics play a big part in how communities mm-hmm. How communities are, and overall how the nation can function, and then environmentally, mm-hmm. what are the aspects, in what type of environment does a person live? Let's take us for example, what type of work environments do we have? Because we forget that a workplace is also part of a community, mm-hmm. and then if our workplaces are, for example, not healthy or are toxic, then our functioning is affected. So is what we do or carry home from our workplaces to our homes as well. So culturally speaking as well, how does culture influence whether we have healthy communities? Let's say if culture believes, let's kill all the twins, for example, as was back in the days, mm-hmm. because twins are a taboo or it's witchcraft or it's regarded. It's just an example that I'm taking. Yeah. So that's how we also look at what is the type of culture, the community itself, besides the traditional norms and the ethnic groups that are there. As a community, what have we made acceptable as normal? And what is not acceptable. Sometimes we might also have made things that are not good for human functioning acceptable, yeah. and normalized it. So these are the aspects that also play part in how are these services received? Are they available? For example, the local authorities, do they have specific services that it's required for community well-being in place, yeah. or are they not in place?
Right.
Yeah.
Ms. Guys, what are some of the most pressing social issues currently that are affecting families and communities in the region, and perhaps also what are the underlying factors that are contributing to the social challenges?
Okay, looking at Oromo region, the top five I would say is substance abuse, which includes illegal drug use as well as alcohol use as well as tobacco cigarette use. Then we have the romantic relationships, be it married relationships, cohabiting, boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, challenges that we also have, which contributes to a large number of domestic violence cases. And then we also have unemployment, and then we also have, should I say, low wage employment, that as much as you are employed, you are not incentives or your wage is not enough for you to afford the current socioeconomic cost for your basic needs that you want to meet. Yeah. You don't get paid enough. So this by top, I would say, which then contributes to a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. that we refer to as stress, mm-hmm. and then which can, if it's untreated, then also lead to depression, which then can also contribute to many other mental health issues. So
mental health conditions, not issues per se, but the mental health conditions. So as much as we are on about the whole mental health aspect of the mental illnesses in the community or the mental ill health behaviors that are in the community, it's very good to then, like you said, look at then what are the contributing factors. So when we talk about substance use, drug use, what are the contributing factors? Why are people using drugs? Why is the youth involved in drug use? It goes back to what we said about what is the culture in the community? What have we accept as normal? So if we have normalized as adults that it's okay to drink, then drinking will be the norm. And eventually our children will copycat that behavior and carry it over to the next generation. So with drug use, it can also be low self-esteem issues. It can also be issues of, like I said, unhealthy family relationships. It can also be an identity crisis that can lead to drug use. And one of the most pressing ones is exposure. How we are exposed to this through media, through TV, through movies, series, how cool it's portrayed to be. So that also creates that desire of triggers that in a human being to want to try this out. So then if you talk about marital and intimate relationship problems that leads to physical violence, emotional abuse and all that. So one of the contributing factors would then be interlinked to substance use. Yeah, my partner abuses substance, and then because of that, there might be violence at home. Maybe he might not, he or she might not be bringing money to the house. You understand, which leads to then the economic abuse as well. So besides that, when it comes to relationship, is how ready are we spiritually, mentally, emotionally? When we engage in relationships, how mature are we for these relationships? You understand? So that then contributes to a different other set of problems within a romantic relationship. It's not just the mere sexual attraction and then we jump into a relationship. So if we then look at the other that I mentioned, stress. So obviously if I've listed the other two and they are contributing factors, then it becomes obvious why people will be under pressure. If we talk about unemployment, if we look at our current employment creation structures, do we have the required capacity or the required professionals, or do we have the required structures to attract people to be employed in the positions? Then also, how qualified are people to be considered for employment? And besides that, employment is something that came with, if I may say, with the previous regime of apartheid, of colonialization, with the industrial revolution. And it has removed from our people's minds the independent functioning way. People feel like I must be employed to feel like, you know, I have something. But also income, money-wise, monetary-wise, employment, if you don't have money, it can lead to stress. You understand? So lack of employment leads to lack of money. And then lack of money leads to stress. Stress can lead to substance use, and substance use can lead to other types of crimes.
Thank you, Ms. Guys.
Now, the session highlighted the importance of building resilient communities that are equipped to respond to changing economic conditions, social pressures, and emerging public health concerns. Now, participants also explored the role of local leadership, community-based organizations, and public institutions in promoting social cohesion, supporting vulnerable groups, and ensuring that development initiatives reach those who need them most. Now, a key theme emerging from the discussion was the importance of partnerships. Now, speakers emphasized that improving community well-being requires coordinated efforts between government, the private sector, non-governmental organizations, faith-based grounds, and local communities. Now, by working together, stakeholders can better address issues such as unemployment, substance abuse, gender-based violence, food insecurity, and inequality. And the session further highlighted the growing need for evidence-based approaches to community development. Participants were encouraged to use data, research, and community feedback to inform programs and policies aimed at improving social outcomes and strengthening service delivery. Now, youth empowerment also featured prominently during the discussion. In addition, the gathering underscored the significance of mental health, as you've heard in the speech, and psychosocial support as essential components of community well-being. Participants noted that addressing mental health challenges and promoting emotional resilience are increasingly important in building healthy and productive communities. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with economic indicators. Thereafter, news beyond the borders of Namibia. Please do stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM. The I.
And now for some economic indicators. $1 dollar today is equals to 16 Namibian dollars, 0.49. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.44. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars, 0.49. £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars, 0.79. €1 is equals to 18 Namibian dollars, 0.80. One Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars, 0.43. And last but not least, one Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar, 0.21. Let's pause here again, take a trip to the marketplace. When we come back, we'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now remember, if you want to be part of the conversation, air your opinions or contributions, our studio line is very much open. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401. That's the number in studio. Please come through, air opinions, ask questions and contribute.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ngetashake ngeshe faa omarudi
Efiloshisho utali kulandula kona ave wayuka. Ekwashilipaleko lo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. Oatupateleko meshwe kwashilipaleko la fika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshilio shetukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lo paulumo mumbu. Kwa aboveli ponjeo shilongo, shijo shitopo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mo ule ominute disho naelela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya murwendo ponje yoshilongo e mango no malandula fano ododino kulandurwa NHP rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Welcome back, and now brace yourself for news beyond the borders of Namibia. And as always, we always start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. We're starting off in South Africa, neighboring country, where City Power in South Africa has raised concerns over rising vandalism.
City Power has announced that planned electricity interruptions are scheduled to take place this week in an attempt to strengthen, maintain and improve the reliability and stability of the electricity network. The utility has also raised concerns about criminal activity targeting its infrastructure and personnel. For more on this, rejoined by City Power spokesperson Isaac Mangena. Isaac, can you give us a sense of the scale of refurbishment and maintenance that will be taking place this week?
Thank you very much for this opportunity and for Power. Look, as City Power, every week we are basically embarking on routine maintenance of our infrastructure, and this is something that we do not to punish the residents, but it's basically to ensure that we prolong the lifespan of the electricity network that we are basically running across the city of Johannesburg. So we've got several areas that will basically be out for at least 8 hours in a day to ensure that we deal with these issues. And these are the areas, including across our supply areas in Rembeck, in Rudeport, in Midrand, and also in Ruven, but also in Lenasia, so that we can then be able to refurbish and so that we prolong the lifespan. Often when we do this, residents think that we are basically embarking on load reduction or even load shedding. Some of them have actually complained that City Power is embarking on load shedding, but the communication is sent earlier, prior, at least 14, 7 days and 21 days prior to this activities happening across the city, so that residents can understand the work that will be happening, so that they can then have an uninterrupted supply of electricity. It's like with your vehicle, whenever there is a scheduled maintenance that's supposed to happen. That's basically what is happening also with our electricity network. And I think that is the thing that we are going to be doing this week, but we've also done it even the previous week, interchangeably between substations.
And you say the interruptions will be for 8 hours per day per area during the day, I'm assuming.
Yes. So what we do normally is that whenever there was any prolonged outage that happened, maybe prior to that planned maintenance happening, we postpone that maintenance because we don't want to put more pressure on our residents. And we want to basically make sure that we don't have that limit. We've got that limited interruption to electricity network supply. So when we have this planned maintenance, we do communicate, we do call, and residents who have got especially special holiday activities that are happening in the area, who request that we postpone those kind of maintenance, we do that, because it's not like your outage that will need us to basically make sure that it's an emergency outage or it is an unplanned outage. So we can basically move it to another direction. But then when it is something that is supposed to be planned, we basically make sure that we inform the residents, we talk to the community leadership, the councillors in particular, who remain our key stakeholders, so that we can then be able to schedule it properly and minimize the interruption that might happen. So it happens during the day. It happens during the time when people would have noticed that this is what's happening. Then those that are working, SMMEs working from home, small businesses, and those that are in critical path, especially the health services, the schools, and also the police, they can then make alternatives as to how they can then be able to supply electricity until the maintenance is done.
Yeah. Will City Power be using this as an opportunity to inspect for illegal connections as well?
So the plant maintenance is one thing. The issue around revenue protection, which talks to also dealing with the issues around our technical and non-technical losses where illegal connections fall, is basically one of another issue that we deal with. There we do not have mercy, because basically that is the theft that is happening on our electricity network. These are the people that are not supposed to be connected to the network for one reason or the other. Either they are in illegal informal settlement that has not been proclaimed by the Department of Housing, or they are those that are trying to run away from paying for electricity and they've connected themselves illegally. With those, we don't even make an appointment. We don't call to say or to give notice to say this is when we're coming to do the disconnections. And we've seen a lot of those. I think in the last count, we're sitting at around 300 informal settlements across the city of Johannesburg. That is where most of the illegal connections are happening. You would have seen last week in Cassens where we basically disconnected. In fact, we found a makeshift organized criminality of distribution network running in those areas where we retrieved about 10 stolen transformers, both belonging to City Power and Eskom, and we basically disconnected those. And it's because of people come to Johannesburg, as attractive as it is for economic opportunities, for school opportunities, and then they set up informal settlements, and then us as service deliveries like water and electricity come at the tail end, and we find where people are actually connecting us illegally. That's why we do illegal disconnections of illegal connections, those connections that would have been done illegally, and then we do not make an appointment for those. But the plant maintenance, those are the ones where we are basically telling our customers that this is the work that we're going to do. We're trying to revitalize the network. We're trying to make sure that we prolong the lifespan of the infrastructure, most of which is actually getting old.
Yeah.
In other news, SACRU is resilient in a shifting global trade order. Let's take a listen to that.
Brings together SACRU member states, South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Eswatini at a time of heightened global uncertainty. At the center of discussions is how to strengthen the resilience, deepen regional integration, and reposition SACRU as a competitive trade and investment destination. Executive Secretary at SACRU, Dumsani Masilela, says while the customs union has historically functioned as a revenue-sharing mechanism, there is now a push to evolve it into a driver of industrial development and intra-African trade.
Our objective is to make sure that we deal with this understanding of SACRU being a revenue-sharing platform. It is a broader regional development initiative, which essentially says we must create a Southern Africa that is ready and conducive to promote issues of industrialization in particular, so that we create a prime location for foreign investment in a lot of cases. Yes, we do look at issues of the impact of various developments, because as you well know, the revenue sharing is formula driven, and we are not sure what will happen in the future, but it's a fixed formula.
A key challenge remains the fixed revenue sharing formula, which is a long-standing issue of SACRU that distributes funds based on set variables, often reflecting unequal levels of development among member states. Masilela says efforts are now underway to review the bloc's 2022 to 2027 strategic plan to ensure it remains relevant in a fast-changing global landscape.
We've had commission review the strategic plan to determine what is still relevant, what needs to change, and how far have we gone with the implementation of the initiatives that we had captured in the strategic plan. So they have consolidated that work, and they are going to be presenting it to council and, of course, the court, updating our heads of state.
South Africa, as the largest economy in the bloc, continues to play a pivotal role, both as a major contributor to the common revenue pool and as a driver of regional trade policy. Chair of the SACRU Commission, Ambassador Kolelwa Mlombi Peter, stresses that long-term sustainability depends on ensuring all member states benefit more equitably from the arrangement.
Well, the biggest challenge that we are facing now is the rise in unilateralism as well as protectionism across the globe, and the fact that we see fragmentation in international trade. The discussions will center around how do we respond collectively as SACU to ensure that, as I said at the beginning, there's greater resilience in responding to the current dynamics. And of course, it means one, that we reinforce the unity that we have within SACU, but also importantly, we look at how as SACU we diversify our trade relations with key partners across the world.
Against this backdrop, SACU is also aligning its strategy with the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, working to expand tariff concessions beyond the 90% offer to boost intra-African trade.
We are working in line with the modalities that have been agreed in the agreement, what we need to do in terms of further opening up of the tariff lines so that we can really promote intra-Africa trade.
As deliberations continue, expectations are mounting for concrete outcomes that will strengthen SACU's resilience and redefine its role in a shifting global trade order. Diaboseto, SABC News, Cape Town.
In other news, South Africa and the EU reaffirm cooperation amid global uncertainty.
South Africa and the EU, a partnership that is in sharp focus. DIRCO's Director General says it remains rooted in shared democratic values and a commitment to cooperation at a time of increasing geopolitical volatility.
The outcomes of the 8th South African EU summit and the leaders' meeting stand as a milestone in our bilateral relations. It reaffirmed our shared commitment to multilateralism and a rules-based international order, even as the world confronts increasing geopolitical volatility, unilateralism, and economic realignment.
The meeting follows what both sides described as a landmark year for relations. In 2025, South Africa and the European Union held a summit, expanded cooperation across several sectors, and launched a global gateway investment package worth nearly 12 billion euros.
Our ambition today, co-chair and director general, is twofold. First is to take a stock of those remarkable achievements and to reflect honestly on the lessons that we have learned. Let us identify what has worked and how we can build on that successes. And secondly, and perhaps even more importantly, we should chart the way forward. Let us focus our efforts on concrete priorities and tangible outcomes that improve people's lives over the coming year. And you have mentioned, Director General, with a special focus also on the youth.
Speaking after the meeting, Dangoa said South Africa and the European Union remain aligned on key global issues, adding that the relationship has become increasingly important as countries navigate a more complex and uncertain global environment.
Countries like South Africa and the EU as a collective understand that we need each other in a complex global world where those who believe that might is right may want to do things differently. We are foregrounding the importance of collaboration, and there's a pivot from South Africa to engage not only with the EU, but also with EU member states, both politically and economically.
The Joint Cooperation Council, a principal platform for monitoring and advancing the South African-EU strategic partnership, both sides have expressed confidence that their cooperation will continue to grow in the years ahead. I'm Buthali Pile, SABC News, Pretoria.
Still on African news, Nairobi Summit maps Africa's digital future. Let's take a listen to that.
Africa is experiencing rapid digital growth. This is not without significant challenges, including unequal internet access, rising cybersecurity threats, and gaps in digital infrastructure. At the Africa Internet Summit 2026, policymakers, regulators, technical experts, engineers, and academics from across the continent are discussing how best to harness the opportunities of the digital age while overcoming persistent barriers to connectivity and inclusion.
Our theme for this year, Shaping Africa's Internet Future Through Collaboration, Innovation, and Resilience, is two-sided. It is a reminder and a challenge. It's a reminder that Africa's digital future is ripe for shaping, that this is a moment of opportunity and possibility. The challenge is directed to you and I. It's a challenge to step up because we are the shapers of Africa.
While stakeholders agree that expanding internet connectivity requires a coordinated effort, infrastructure gaps continue to slow progress in many parts of the continent.
One major problem that Africa is facing has to do with the last mile connectivity. Now, you discover like most of the big cities in Africa, the undersea cables are already there, but the internet penetrating into the hinterland in most of the countries in Africa is always a problem. So the last mile is what differentiates the cost of internet in the major city and the cost and availability of internet in the suburbs to the local areas. So what most governments are doing now is to ensure that they get this last mile connected even into the local areas.
Sustained investment in networks, data centers, and digital infrastructure has been touted as critical.
You are forced to have to exchange parameters and coordinate. So that's the very nature of why we have this multi-stakeholder, multidisciplinary kind of coordination. We are forced to have to coordinate. We can't just get up and go. And that coordination also translates into higher and higher, better uses. If we don't coordinate with the village, then you will not be able to get the internet there, and or even if you get it there, it may not be used properly and keeps on like that. So the internet has a certain spirit of forcing us to have to collaborate, communicate, share things.
The summit therefore provides a platform for voices from across sectors to help shape a more connected, secure, and inclusive digital future for the continent.
As internet connectivity continues to expand across Africa and new technologies take ground, stakeholders are making sure that no community is left behind. And that is why the conversations here at the Africa Internet Summit are very important. And aside from that, they're geared towards tackling challenges and also finding new opportunities for everyone in the continent. I'm Trix Ingado for CGTN.
Well, let us delve further into that conversation. We're now joined by Professor Wale Adedokun. He's the chairman of the African Network Information Center, and he joins us now in the studio. Great to have you on the show with us, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And I know I'd like to find out, first of all, what the state of the overall industry is. As you're discussing at this conference, what people say or what analysts say is that it has seen major improvements in network coverage, but there's still a significant mobile internet usage gap. So what are stakeholders focused on addressing right now?
Okay. Once again, thank you for having me. Three basic things that stakeholders are looking at and discussing now. The first one has to do with coverage into the underserved and the unserved areas. I mean, there are quite a number of places that are underserved and not served. Some of these places are probably they are not commercially viable,
right?
Because connectivity basically is being driven by the private sector, and right, it's all about return on investment. So areas that are not commercially viable, so stakeholders are looking at discussing heavily on how to reach some of those places.
Right.
We are discussing a lot about policies, policies that drives this penetration of internet connectivity, and we are doing this, you know, by ensuring that we get Africans to design their own policies, policies that are suited for Africans, developed by Africans. So we bring people, into the room to ensure that we discuss these policies.
Right.
The third thing that we are looking at is trying to ensure that we discuss interconnectivity among ourselves in Africa, than develop, continue to depend on connectivities from outside Africa. So we are looking at discussing how can we connect amongst ourselves, how can we share without going outside, how can I send a message to someone, connect to someone within the same locality without necessarily going up there and coming back again. So,
regional powers are seeking a path to a lasting U.S.-Iran ceasefire.
Quartet meeting focused heavily on the U.S.-Iran conflict. The quartet meeting focused heavily on the U.S.-Iran conflict and the direct peace talks taking place between the main parties in Switzerland on Sunday. In a statement in Cairo, the four members said they had discussed means to gap the differences between the warring sides, especially on issues like Iran's nuclear program and keeping the Strait of Hormuz open for international trade.
It's an important meeting with the timing and high-level delegations present in Egypt. They have outlined a vision for mediation, putting in consideration for regional security. They are also coordinating with officials in Switzerland to ensure that the best interests of all the countries in the region are included in any final deal.
Dubbed the Regional Four, the foreign ministers of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Turkey also met with U.S. envoy Massad Boulos and Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who emphasized that any deal should guarantee the safety and security of the Gulf Arab states.
But one of the thorniest issues that threatened to hamper the fragile ceasefire concerns two countries that are not even present in the talks: Lebanon and Israel.
Iran accused Israel of violating its ceasefire agreement with Hezbollah after launching weekend attacks on what it said were militant targets in Lebanon. Tehran said it closed the Strait of Hormuz in response. This, as U.S. officials had also rebuked Israel in recent days for undermining peace efforts.
The memorandum of understanding was very clear: there should be no attacks on Lebanon. It was mentioned three times. In response was escalation by Israel, which is not happy with the ceasefire and wants to keep control of strategic parts of South Lebanon. The problem is that Israel won't abide by the ceasefire because this could mean an end to Netanyahu's time in power.
Despite the complicated nature of the peace talks and mistrust among the various players, some experts here remain optimistic that a breakthrough can be reached before the 60-day deadline.
I believe the two parties want an end to this crisis. The U.S. doesn't have another solution except to overcome all hurdles to sign a deal. This is obvious in statements and recent actions by Trump and J.D. Vance, especially before upcoming local elections that can be impacted by the war. Iran has also shown serious intentions not to resume a war that has been damaging.
With multiple mediation efforts in full swing, the Regional Four here in Egypt announced they will be holding regular meetings with all parties to help put permanent end to the war that has destabilized regional and international affairs. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo.
Meanwhile, Iran says the ongoing conflict between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon remains a key issue in discussions with the United States.
President J.D. Vance says that Iran has agreed to invite International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors back. He also added that it could be this week, as soon as today. Now, the Iranian Foreign Minister, Syed Abbas Araghchi, says that the U.S. agreed to waive Iranian oil sanctions and also to release some frozen assets. He praised, in quotes, major progress in talks on ending the war in Lebanon through a deconfliction cell. Well, our correspondent Essen Kevani tells us more from Yaz in central Iran.
Among multiple critical issues negotiated between the two sides, one of the key issues for Iran was the U.S. waivers for Iran's oil export. According to the central bank chief of Iran, who travels to Switzerland, the U.S. Department of the Treasury will soon issue such waivers through the Office of Foreign Asset Control, known as OFAC. This will enable Iran to export oil and petrochemical products without extra costs the country used to suffer from. Because in this new scenario, Iran can benefit from insurance services as well as banking and transaction facilities. Iran says it is expected that the waiver notice will be published on the U.S. Treasury Department's website very soon. This can be interpreted as a great economic achievement for Iran in the very first step. Past week's negotiations have shown that this is the biggest red line for Iran. Withdrawal of Israeli forces from Lebanon, plus an end to Israeli military operations there, have been among the focal points of discussions, as Iran has made the success and implementation of the Islamabad Memorandum of Understanding conditional upon the end to war across all fronts, including Lebanon. The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has also warned Israeli forces operating in southern Lebanon that continued military action and occupation would lead to another forced withdrawal similar to Israel's pullout from Lebanon in the year 2000. So from what we see here in Iran, the issue of Lebanon is non-negotiable for Iran.
Meanwhile, British Prime Minister and Labour Party leader Keir Starmer has announced his resignation from his position.
After weeks of growing speculation, Britain's Prime Minister Keir Starmer walked up to the podium in front of 10 Downing Street on Monday morning to announce his resignation.
Every decision I've taken has been about putting the country I love first. That is why I will resign as leader of the Labour Party. I have spoken to His Majesty the King this morning to inform him of my decision.
I'm glad, really. Just needed a change.
Peter Murrell, the former chief.
I think like most of the country are probably just feeling the same way as what I am.
I felt Keir Starmer was a decent guy, and it just seems to be a modern day phenomenon that British Prime Ministers don't last very long.
6 years ago, when Keir Starmer became Labour leader, the party was deeply divided and considered almost unelectable. Yet 2 years ago, he became Prime Minister after leading Labour to a landslide victory, overturning a huge Conservative majority.
What an amazing reception. We did it!
But the honeymoon didn't last long. A series of embarrassing U-turns over unpopular policies, like today, ending winter fuel payments to millions of pensioners, raised questions about his political judgment. But it was the appointment of Peter Mandelson to become ambassador to Washington, despite his known association with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, that became a major political embarrassment, increasing calls for Starmer to resign. On the world stage, Keir Starmer did win respect for his ability to build a relationship with US President Donald Trump.
Meanwhile, former SNP chief executive Peter Murrell has been sentenced to 5 years and 3 months after he admitted embezzling more than 400,000 euros party funds of SNP.
The executive of the Scottish National Party has been Peter Murrell, the former chief executive of the Scottish National Party, has been sentenced to 5 years and 3 months in prison. You heard the judge, Lord Young, there say it will be backdated to the 25th of May, which is when he was first remanded in custody, having admitting to embezzling more than £400,000 from the party and using it to purchase a range of goods. Before we heard from the judge, we heard his defence lawyer set out his submission, which included a certain amount of mitigation. And some notable aspects of that included that he recognised, Peter Murrell, that he behaved dishonestly, the impact of that on not only himself, but broader society. And he is one that expresses guilt and remorse, and that he has been overwhelmed by feelings of embarrassment and shame, so much so that he has been withdrawn from social contexts. prior to his guilty plea. So he has been sentenced to 5 years and 3 months in prison, the judge noting that it would have been a 7-year sentence had a trial gone ahead. But because Peter Murrell pleaded guilty in a preliminary stage of this case, something that the judge said saved the judicial system time and resource, essentially, that was a sentence reduced to 5 years and 3 months. The judge also went through some of the factors that had been heard in the narrative hearing of this case, something that happened at the beginning of June. So that was when the range of his offending was set out, a narrative was agreed between the prosecution and the defense in court. And the judge reiterating that this was offending that increased in amount and frequency over the 12-year period between 2010 and 2022, but also noting that he was and is a first-time offender. Listening to what the judge just had to say is our Scotland correspondent Katie Hunter, who's outside the High Court in Edinburgh. 5 years and 3 months, Katie, but what stood out to you the most?
Well, there was quite a lot in there, Ria, wasn't there? If we start with Murrell's defence, he fully complied with the criminal justice social work report. He cooperated fully and candidly, according to his lawyer. He acknowledged that he was facing a custodial sentence, and he acknowledged that throughout the period he had behaved dishonestly. And his lawyer said that he recognises the harm caused to those directly affected and kind of wider society. He accepted full responsibility, and that he was overwhelmed by embarrassment and shame. And his lawyer said that he had been living almost in total isolation at points that was a detriment to his health. But he does, and this was a theme we kept coming back to, recognise that he was entirely to blame. In terms of what's
And now this brings us to the conclusion after this episode of On the Read News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Penny Ambeko. Join us from Indafa. Happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, for yet another session of On the Read News Analysis. Goodbye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
Ko vano ile ko shiwa ko nongeshefa ya pumbo ko karaya ko vano.
ukupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebi todanjuka ukupitira oipindi konu Honda Dainawa nune uto otukupitira o special angeta shake ngejifa omarudi dayo loka okunu ushendi finawa nukumuna oijewa ili nawa ninge pata fanuwa Monica ko Eagle FM konmara itatuimwe bali hea di nola natu hea di bali no hea ile kongerewa nora itatu natu bali o itatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any
staff. My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Media House. Ngwe tuende tu imemeha uu kakombanga nena. Kara omkwa shipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira Selma, konara heta tu imu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha gutekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ompito ombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandito ma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tu imemeha uu kakombanga nena. Kara omkwa shipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira Selma, konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudite opoye ekukurile Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana Kono nongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito.njuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune uto otukwetera o special angeta shake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and Eagle
staff. My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye. The eye.